Radio City Talk. The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Let's talk Paralympics with Sean Idell. Morning to you, Sean.
Morning, Steve.
I tell you what, that month, it seems like you were just sat here yesterday, but that month that the Paralympics took place, or the 2 weeks and the 2 weeks preceding it, has gone in a flash, has it for you?
Yeah, and that's what I was saying when I was last on the show about you have to live in the moment, because I knew it was going to go so fast. Like, everyone's told me, you know, just enjoy everything that happens, because, you know, it's gone before you know it. And it's exactly the same with me. Like, it was the most best experience in my life, the most surreal thing I've ever done in my life. It was just madness just to see, you know, how people adapt to life. And it's definitely putting life into perspective for me.
Oh, I bet it has. When did you get back?
Yeah, I got back on Tuesday night. We landed at Heathrow about 1 o'clock on the Tuesday, and then obviously we had a driver then bring us home, so I got into ours about five.
And was that like the Olympic team? Was it all the Paralympic team together, the GB Paralympic team?
Yeah, there was two flights. I think the first one was mostly the ones with like all the medals and stuff, and then the second ones, we still had, you know, Ellie Simmons and, you know, and the fella who won the 100 metres and that, so we still had them on the second flight. So, you know, we still had some big names on our flights, and then when we come off to a nice support from
reception,
all the reception, from all the people who worked in the airport. So it was still nice, and a lot of paparazzi when we got out there.
What was the mood like on that plane coming home?
Well, ours, to be fair, was quite like, they were trying to save champagne and not many people were having it, and they were saying we can't give it away because the night before we had like a party in Great Britain, in the Great Britain camp. So they were nice enough on the last night that they threw a big party. We had the DJ on Unlimited Ale. They brought 150 boxes of Domino's pizzas to the camp.
Brilliant.
So I think I stopped about 6 o'clock in the morning, so I was a bit worse for wear, so I weren't having any more the next day. Like, and I think a lot of the people were the same.
So everyone had the seats reclined.
Yeah, everyone. I slept 9 hours on a 10-hour flight, so when I woke up, there was an hour left, so I was happy with that. Like,
the eye shades are on. Since you've been back, has it given you a little bit of time for reflection? We'll talk in the next sort of half hour about, you know, what you achieved out there, but have you managed to sort of sit down and think, wow, what
not
went
really
on?
You know, not obviously, I haven't had the minute, I haven't had the chance. Obviously, I've had to get back in and get back to normal life, and that's been difficult as well. Obviously, still being a little bit jet lagged and stuff like that. But, you know, when you do sit and talk about it, it's hard to talk about it because how mad it is, and I could sit here all day and tell you different things what happened. But as I said, I think the most thing was it was just put life into perspective for me, because even when we were in the airport on the way home, there was a guy there and he was playing like the guitar with his toes because he had no arms, and he was playing on the piano with like his stumps because he had no hands, and his chin, and he weren't even just playing it, he was playing the Titanic song, and you should have heard how good he was, mate. And like, I didn't know him, but all the lads said, yeah, he's famous in that round here. But he was just scary how, you know, how we do, and people were painting with the stick in their mouth because they had no arms, and it was just madness.
And you saw an awful lot. There was an awful lot that sort of bowled you over throughout the course of the 2 weeks.
Yeah, but in the village, you had everything. You had the McDonald's was free. Obviously, we couldn't touch that until we were kind of finished, and then we just nailed it every day.
McDonald's was free. They just had a big golden arch
It's just a normal Mackey's, but you got your ticket. You order what you want, got a ticket. Went to the other side, when your number come on the screen, you handed it in, and you could literally have anything, because we were wondering that. So one of the lads ordered 100 nuggets.
I'm not believing you here. Paralympic Games and it's free McDonald's. So he had 100 nuggets.
100 nuggets,
was he a big lad?
No, we just tested the water to see if they had a limit. So we said, I'll have 100 nuggets. And he said, yeah, I said.
That's a proper Scouse thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
100 nuggets. I can't believe there's a free Mackey's.
I've seen enough of Mackey's now, I think, for a long time. This is Radio City Talk.
Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool. Sean Hyde, my special guest this hour, of course, involved in the Paralympics with the GB Cerebral Palsy team. Let's go back to the start of the Paralympics, and what were your hopes and expectations, Sean, as you headed out there, you landed, you saw the facilities. What did you really believe you could achieve as a team?
Well, we got to, obviously, the highest, we finished fifth, so that was our highest ever finish. So I think that was our, you know, where we wanted to try, and that was our borderline kind of thing. But when we play teams building up to the Paralympics and stuff, like, there was no reason why we couldn't have got a medal. And to be fair, obviously, not making no excuses, if the groups would have got drawn any different, we were definitely the third best team there. It was just tough luck the way we got Brazil and Ukraine in our groups, which are ranked one and second in the world. So, you know, we obviously got beat 2-1 against them. Even still, that just proves how far we've come and how good we are, because they went on to win the semi-final, like 4-0 in the final, like what 4-0 or whatever. So, yeah, and that just shows how far we've come.
Even tougher, the fact you lost 2-1 to both of them, wasn't it? The margin was so narrow.
Yeah, and to be fair, Brazil, we could have easily got a draw, maybe more. We had a couple of things that on another day could have went our way. We hit the post that went right across the line. A lad missed an open goal in the last minute for us.
Oh.
So we definitely could have at least got a draw. Ukraine battled us, to be fair. It could have been about 6.
They're the world champs, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they won it. Yeah, they could have beat us 5 or 6-1 if it weren't for our keeper. You know, we've got the best keeper in the world, so... He kept us in the game, but as I said, Brazil, we could have easily got a tour, and it could have turned out different.
What were the sort of environments you were playing in?
Well, we were lucky enough to be. Our first two games were at 10 o'clock in the morning, so it was kind of before the sun was coming out. But then we played 2 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was red hot. Like you couldn't breathe properly, and the sweat was dipping off you. I remember we were playing a 4 o'clock game, and we had to get there early, so. When we got there, it was half-time at the game before us and the lads come off. I think it was Argentina and he was just dripping with sweat and we were just thinking, oh, this is going to be hard, this.
Was it just the heat or was it an altitude?
Yeah, it's a bit of heavy. It's just mad. It's hard to explain. It's roasting and then, you know, as I said, it's sticky and you can't get your breath properly and it's totally different. But, you know, I think we adapted to it very well and, you know, a lot of teams are coming up to us, you know, like Ukraine who have battled us over the years and that and like giving thumbs up, like to say, you know, he's getting up there with us, so, you know, we've got exciting times ahead.
On a personal level, how do you feel you play?
Yeah, obviously it's hard because the way the situation is, you can only play 1-8, and the manager took 3 of us because he said, I think you bring different qualities. So, you know, I only played in the 2 of the games out of 4, but, you know, when I did play, I think I played very well. Obviously, stars against Ukraine, they were ranked number 1, and I think I held my own against their centre mid until I started getting a bit tired because they just pass it about for fun. And then played against Ireland and, you know, I kind of think that I was the best player. Like, so yeah, I was happy with it.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of think I was the best, on it. But you got a goal as well in that
against
game.
Them, yeah.
And the atmosphere, and we talked about it as well while you were over there. It was sort of widely touted that there was all sorts of problems with it, with the build-up. It didn't materialise massively in that way. Yeah. And I know the very first game you played against Brazil was almost a bit of a carnival atmosphere, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the one against Ukraine, I played them, was even better. There was literally sold out, 15,000 people. Because when we played Brazil, we got told it was going to be a sellout. And when the game started, it was only like half full. So we were all saying, like, what's happened to the sellout? And the more the game went on, the gradually it got busier. But when we played Ukraine, it was literally a sellout. And I'll always remember it, like when we've walked out with them, one of our players, he thought he was playing on the premise, and he started waving the fans to cheer. Like, and I was just thinking, what's he doing?
Who was that?
Emil Rudder. He started giving all that to the fans. So, but then the fans just took off and I was just thinking, wow, this is scary. And when before the game, the whistle to start was a countdown on a big screen. So I'd done like 10 and all the fans were just singing it with them. And then when it got to 0, obviously the ref blew it. And it was just, that was just like something that'll just stick in my head forever.
How much time sort of in between games did you have to actually do anything in Rio? Was there sort of downtime where you could maybe, I don't know, head into the city or...?
No, not when the games were on. Like we
You're permanently locked up inside the Olympic Village?
We didn't move, yeah. We just we had a match and then we had a day off and then a match again. And literally on the day off, we were just chilling and not doing anything. We had a games room where we could go play FIFA and stuff. And that was it. No, we weren't allowed out until it had finished.
How well set up was it? Was the Paralympic Village?
Yeah, it was great. Obviously, for me, that's my first one, and it was a massive eye opener of you know how it was run and that. But a couple of lads have been to. They went to Beijing and they went to London, and they said they thought that was the worst one. So I can only imagine how.
In what aspect? The McDonald's, the free McDonald's.
Yeah, no, just the way. Like I don't know. They just said the way it was set up, and I don't know. And obviously, the closing ceremony for me was 80, like about I think there were about 60,000 people there, and it was for me. I was just thinking, wow, getting shivers and that. But they went to London one, and they had like Beyonce, Jay-Z, Coldplay. So they said when they was in London, it was mad. But here we had more Brazilian stars and that, which we didn't really know, but. So no, it was as I said, it'd be something I'll never ever forget.
What blew you away more, the opening or the closing?
He didn't go the opening, did he?
Oh, of course, no. So yeah. It was the closing ceremony. That was probably quite important to you then,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, as I said, but it started raining, and obviously it was in the Maracanã Stadium, so we started to get a bit wet, and I kind of got the feeling that it was dying a bit, so the party was going back on in the GB camp, so I was like, that's the manager, let's just go and get on the ale. But and then as we've got off, a few of the lads stayed, and when they've come back, they said that, I think it's Callum Scott who sings Dancing on My Own and all that, come on. So I was a bit gutted I got off in the end, like, but, you know, as for the few hours I was there, it was mad.
What a great celebration. I know you didn't go to the opening, as you say, but there was a brilliant start to it all with the guy in the wheelchair who came down the ramp and went through the hoop of fire. Did you see it?
We watched it all on the telly in the camp. We had a big screen, so we all watched it and stuff.
I mean, what a buzz. You all must have been thinking, wow, what are we part of here?
Yeah, well, that's what it was like, though. It was just mad. Like, a fella playing table tennis with his mouth, and that is just, honestly, it's just, you can't, as I said, it's hard to explain until you're actually there. I got a couple of videos in the airport on the way home of the fella playing the guitar with his toes and that, and that's only like a little bit I can show people, but some of the things people were doing and that was just mad.
What took your breath away? I know you didn't get a lot of time to sort of watch all sports because your games were ongoing, but there was a bit of time at the end, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Was there anything you particularly watched sporting-wise that you thought, that is just remarkable? Blind football?
Blind football, yeah. We followed.
How does it work?
They've got like a little, like a bell kind of thing in the ball, and obviously, you know, and you have like the blind anyway, and then they have like another bandage on top, so there's no cheating going on.
So there's no vision whatsoever for these players.
No, and they literally just go off the sound of the ball. And when we followed it quite well, to be fair. And we watched this lad for Brazil, I don't know his name, number 7, and he was just picking people out, passes literally to feet. And we're just thinking, like, I can't even do that. How is he managing to do it? But, you know, that was the one sport that just blew me head off, thinking, mad.
Do they deal with that as sort of a one touch of the ball and then understanding where they've stopped the ball so they can kick it? Or?
Yeah, no, what they do is they put the ball in between the feet and like they move it side to side so the ball's never away from the feet. And then they must understand their own players' voices and like when is the area where it's come from, then they pass it to them. And then like they've got a fella who works them behind the goal and he can bang the posts so they know exactly where the goal is and stuff like that. It's just mad because obviously one of the fellas who was with us, he used to teach it or he used to be involved in it, so he was explaining all the rules, what happens and stuff.
Quite a few people, I think, mentioned the blind football afterwards. Yeah. It certainly seemed to gain a lot of notoriety, certainly a lot of attention. Any other sports as well? I know you mentioned meeting Ellie Simmons at one point.
Yeah, but we've been in the same camp. That was another mad thing. Like, you'd be watching a telly and like, someone would win gold and you think, I was talking to her in the lift about like a few hours ago, and Ellie Simmons, me and my mate, we were dying to get a photo with her, but we kept flapping it every time she walked past. In the end, I grew a set and asked her, and she was sound, and we ended up having a good drink with her on the last night, and you know, she was a good laugh.
I watched some of the swimming, and I watched this one race. I can't remember the lad's name from GB who won it, but he was amazing, set a new world record. But the lad who came second, who was from, I think it might have been Thailand or Japan, he had one arm. And obviously the GB lad had two arms.
Yeah.
And before the race, I remember looking at the TV and thinking, well, he'll be lucky if he finishes anywhere above sixth or seventh in the race. He finished second with one arm. And it sort of epitomised to me how our perceptions, our preconceived ideas, perhaps, of some of these people with disabilities are that they can't achieve things at a high level.
Well, that's what like I was thinking sometimes. Like races, for example, Ellie Simmons, like she'd be racing against a woman who's fully grown and looks all right, and I'd be thinking that should be unfair. And the next minute, Ellie's just smoking it, and you just think. And I remember watching, there was a swimmer with no arms. He was swimming with no arms, and I was thinking he comes second, literally by the fella. Put his arm out and got there. Obviously, he couldn't do that, but he ended up just losing out on it because obviously he had no arms. It's just, as I said, the way the body adapts to how they can, you know, what they can and can't do is just scary.
It makes you wonder if it's an even more sort of admirable physical achievement.
Yeah, it is definitely
than an Olympian.
Yeah, no, it is definitely like they deserve a lot more credit than what the Olympians do for me. Like, you know, as I said, the way they've adapted the body. And a lot of people, you know, would just give up on life and they've turned their life into be a Paralympian champions or even taking part. And it's special. And some people were there with no arms, no legs and blind. And I just think, like, wouldn't you just, like what can life be like without that? But they're going past you and they're just smiling every single day and having jokes and that. And as I said, it just makes you put life in, you know, into perspective. Yeah.
And there was another story. I read it in the Mirror. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the lady. She was from Holland. She was competing in a wheelchair racing, and she was saying she was considering euthanasia after she'd finished the Paralympic Games.
Yeah.
She was in that much pain in her life, but she'd been driven to sort of target individual Paralympic Games. But she was that sort of you know, desperate about her condition that she was considering taking her own life after the games. I tell you what, so many stories that came out of it. Has it in any way changed preconceived ideas, do you think, about people with disabilities?
I'm not sure. Maybe
it needs to, doesn't it? In some ways.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, but I don't know. I couldn't even imagine to put myself in their spot. Do you know what I mean? Because, as I said, if it was me on the other end, if I had theirs, I know straight away I'd be thinking, as like the girl did, if I had no arms, no legs, I'm blind, I'd be thinking, what's the point? But as I said, they were the happiest people in the whole camp. See them every day having laughs and jokes with people. They have to hold, what they do, the blind, they have to hold onto someone's arm so they can walk them round. And every day they're just laughing and that, like it doesn't, like they don't even know about
it. But it's normal life, isn't it?
It's normal life. It was mad because we felt like the weird ones. Like we felt like, because we were
almost normal.
Yeah, we felt like the ones that were abnormal, because everyone in the village was, you know, had a proper disability where we haven't really, like ours is our brain. So looking at us, you'd think there was nothing up with us. A lot of people were saying that, what's up with you? And you'd be thinking, oh, you know what I mean? So we felt like the disabled ones, and they were like, they're not like us, you know what I mean? So it was crazy, but you know, some experience there.
That medal haul is amazing, isn't it? How much was sort of said sort of collectively as a group to the Paralympic GB team? Look, about beating a target as a whole medal haul, or was it not? Was that not mentioned?
It was mad because how well we done. You know, obviously China won it, but you know the population they've got compared to us is you know massive. But there was a woman called Penny, and before she was like saying like she was hypo on that, and she was saying, you know, we want to do this and we want to smash it and that. And at the very end, she got us all in the front lawn to take a photo, and then she stood up and said, and like, you know, you have done exactly what we've done. We've absolutely smashed it, which, you know, obviously we couldn't contribute on the medals, which was sad, but, you know, for everyone who did, it was, you know, it was unbelievable, and they did smash it over there, yeah.
Of course they did. Are you a little bit disappointed that you said to me last time we spoke that the next Paralympics is probably not going to include this CP football in it?
Yeah.
Now having experienced it, are you a little bit devastated by that?
Yeah, of course, because obviously, the next one's 8 years and I'll be like 33 or something, so there's no way I'll be playing then. But, you know.
Oh, you could do, couldn't you?
The way I'm feeling now at the minute, I'm only 25. I can't imagine what I'll be like when I'm 33. But, I'm gutted. Like, they've done a little preview of how it's going to be at the closing ceremony in Tokyo, and it looks frightening. But, you know, as I said, I'm lucky not many people can say they've even been to one. So, you know, that I've been to one's just. No, I'm over the moon with that. Like
special for you, but your family as well, who went over and supported you.
Yeah, they come over here, and you know, I made up. They love Brazil. They done obviously all the Sugarloaf Mountain and Christ the Demon, and I got to meet up with them at the British House and things like that. And they loved it, and I could see that they were enjoying themselves, which made me, because obviously I didn't get enough as much playing time as what I would have liked. Mm. So obviously I felt a little bit. Think you're my mum and dad coming all the way over and only seeing me in two games and not the full four. So, but just that they enjoyed it, and that made me a bit more happier.
Sean, great to see you again. I know you're off to do some other TV stuff, LFC TV today.
Yeah.
Which is great. Club invited you as well at the weekend, but you won't be there. Maybe another time.
To a festival today.
Yeah, letting your hair down for a little bit. Yeah. Relaxing a little bit now.
Well, you know, as I said to you then, like, I basically stopped everything. Missed out on going to IB doing my mates and stuff because, you know, Paralympics, which is, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity, which I was never ever going to jeopardise it in any way. So now I'm just about to let me hear down.
No, it's the Highdale holiday.
Yeah.
The summer holiday. Top man, thanks for joining me this morning. This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport, and talk for Liverpool.